Blog Talk Radio. Hello and welcome to the Vibrant Health Solutions Radio Show. I'm your host, Dr. Rita Marie Loscalzo, and each week we bring you cutting-edge information about how you can be the healthiest possible. And we do this through introducing concepts of food and nutrients and herbs and lifestyle, because indeed, the person that is most responsible for your health is not your doctor, it's not the pharmacy, it's not even your mom, it's you. And you have control. There's so much that you can do to support a healthy body and a healthy mind. And we have a really exciting show today to talk to you about. And the show is called, What Does the Gut Microbiome Have to Do with Anxiety? And we're going to start with defining a few terms, and I have with me one of my dear friends and one of the coaches on my team and just somebody who is really near and dear to me and who helps me a lot, Lynn. Lynn DeBeer-Johnson, and she's a health coach, and she's an awesome health coach, and she's going to help guide us through this because she gets questions all the time from our community about the gut microbiome and anxiety and depression and all sorts of symptoms. So we're going to get going with this. I'm your guest today, and Lynn's going to be our host and guide us through. So Lynn, welcome. Thank you for being here.
Hello. Thank you for having me. This is going to be fun. I enjoy talking to you and picking your brain about these things and learning more. And I'm pretty darn sure that everybody else does too. So And speaking of that, one of the things that people, we hear a lot about the microbiome and all these different things that it can do for us and things that we can do for it, but a common thread through all of this is, what the heck is the microbiome? So yeah. If you could really help illustrate that for us and get a picture in our mind, that would really be helpful.
Super duper. Yeah, thank you for asking that. And you know that the gut microbiome is actually a collection of, well, the gut microbiome and then there's the microbiome. So let's just step back a second. The microbiome is a collection of organisms that live in symbiosis with you. What does that mean? Well, they live in harmony. They're not attacking you. They're not causing disease. They're living on you and in you and in all the different areas of your body to help with balance. And some of them produce vitamins, and some of them produce protective immune factors, and there's so many things that they do for us. So the microbiome lives on our skin, in our mouths, in our intestines, in the vagina and other tracts like that, the urinary tract, and all throughout the body. So those are the main areas. It's mainly the areas that have exposure to the outside world. And these organisms colonize and they grow within us and they offer a lot of protection.
So one of the things, because we hear about things like bacteria and parasites and fungi and all that other good stuff, are they part of that microbiome?
Great question. So all of these organisms are what live with us. There are tons of bacteria. There are thousands of bacterial species that live within our bodies, thousands of them. And some of them are what we call friendly, right? They're the ones that help us. They support us. Others are kind of like, they're there. They don't do a lot for us as long as for us or against us, as long as they stay in balance with the good stuff. And then there's stuff that's just outright pathogenic that are going to hurt us. The ones that we're certainly concerned about keeping the bad ones out, but we want to keep the colonies of good ones strong enough so that we can keep the bad ones out and so that they outweigh the ones that are kind of what they call opportunistic, right? They're good as long as they stay put, as long as they know their place. They stay put, and they're fine. But once they get out of control, because the good stuff goes down, we lose some of our protective microbiome, then those middle ones start to take control and they can become what's called pathogenic. So we have the good guys, we have the opportunistic guys, and then we have the bad guys. And so just think of it as this, there's more of them than us, first of all. There's more genes related to those microbes than there are to us that live in us. Your stool is probably, oh, I don't know what the percentage is, very high percent, you know, over 50% and maybe more, is microbial life, microbial excrement. And we need to be creating an environment of peace with these guys. Okay, like I said before, they create good hormones for us, they create neurotransmitters for us, they help us create vitamins and minerals, and they help create immune factors that keep everything calm and collected. And the one thing I do want to say is, in the days of old, when I first started in this amazing field, we didn't call it a microbiome. That's a relatively new name. We all talked about the gut flora, and we call the flora and the fauna and what lives in your gut, and the good flora and the not so good stuff. And lately there's been so much research on these gut bugs and the bugs in the rest of our body as well, that they've coined a whole new name, the microbiome. And there's study after study after study. There are so many studies linking the health of our microbiome with the health of the whole rest of the body.
So also lately we've been talking about, you know, the gut and the brain, and because the title of this show is What Does It Have to Do with Anxiety? And mm-hmm. as over the last few weeks and pretty much throughout the length of this radio show, you know, you've talked about how the gut and the brain have this steady ability to communicate with the nervous yeah. system. And you just mentioned a little bit with the neurotransmitters and everything, but so what exactly does all of this with the gut microbiome and the bacteria and all the flora and fauna, what exactly does that have to do with anxiety and other types of psychiatry?
Sure, that's a great question. So just as a step back, anxiety is a condition. It's classified in the medical diagnosis system. It's a valid diagnosis, and it's a situation where it's basically you're in a revved up state, and everything makes you a little bit crazy, a little bit nervous, and it's beyond nervous. It's like, oh, I'm nervous about this. Anxiety is this. It's this feeling that's almost out of control, that there's the mind racing and it's telling stories and creating fantasies about life that don't really exist, and then you get upset about it. So anxiety is a really serious problem. And anxiety in the medical system is treated with class of drugs called anxiolytics or anti-anxiety medications. Many of those anti-anxiety medications are geared towards shifting the neurotransmitter balance in some way. So just to step back from there, so what are neurotransmitters? We hear that word a lot, and a lot of people know what it is, and a lot of people don't. So I like to take my spin on what a neurotransmitter is. It's basically your brain and nervous system's way of communicating from one neuron to the next, from one part of the brain to the next, from the brain and the central nervous system out to the body to tell the limbs what to do, to tell your feet to run when there's a tiger chasing you, to tell your body to slow down when that needs to happen, to turn on your digestion, to turn off your digestion. All of these are communicated via a set of signals from chemicals called neurotransmitters. And neurotransmitters are made up of amino acids combined with some other chemical groups, and in some cases, just a single amino acid. So there's a whole group. There's a lot of neurotransmitters that have been identified. The key ones that have been identified and are important in a situation of anxiety are serotonin, GABA, dopamine, And another one, which is excitatory and excess can cause anxiety, which is glutamate. Not glutamine, but glutamate. And they're similar, but there are differences. So that may sound, well, glutamate, is that the same as monosodium glutamate? Well, yes and no. Monosodium glutamate is a form of glutamate where there's a sodium attached to the glutamate molecule, the amino acid. So, and monosodium glutamate, we know from Chinese restaurant syndrome, a lot of people are very sensitive to it, and it causes this excitation in the nervous system. It can cause really bad headaches from that excitation in the nervous system. So glutamate is an important neurotransmitter in terms of preventing anxiety or preventing its overload in anxiety. And the others are more what we call calming, inhibitory neurotransmitters. So those would be serotonin, GABA, and dopamine. And so the question goes back to, what do these have to do with the gut? What does the gut have to do with anxiety? Well, one of the ways that the gut health and the microbiome contribute to anxiety is in the production of these neurotransmitters. So, for example, a variety of different gut bugs can actually produce these neurotransmitters. So there's certain species that live in our gut that are healthy inhabitants of our gut that produce GABA. And GABA is a calming neurotransmitter. Right? So we've got certain bugs like, for example, certain species of the Bifidobacter, which are common inhabitants of the gut, and which actually is a majority inhabitant of the large intestine. It's a really strong one. It should be very powerfully present. And when it's powerfully present, it produces GABA. It also can produce some serotonin and dopamine. Okay, so there are other species, certain lactobacillus species. There's one in particular called Lactobacillus helvetica, which produces GABA and other calming neurotransmitters. And there's a lot of studies that have been done recently at big universities, published in the Journal of Gastroenterology, which are linking specific organisms with anxiety and treating those people with anxiety by replacing and replenishing those organisms and seeing a reduction in symptoms. So there's a tremendous body of research recently that's pointing to the fact that, well, maybe we don't need these dangerous medications in many cases of anxiety. Maybe what's really going on is the gut. The gut is out of balance. And so I want to just take a step backwards a little bit to talk about, how does that gut get out of balance? How do the organisms, like, if they're supposed to be there, they should be there and they should be making all these neurotransmitters and everything else that they do, and everybody should be happy. But the problem is our lifestyle causes a huge disruption in the gut microbiome. And the way that it does that is the following. Number one, antibiotic use. Antibiotics go in and they basically just like strip out everything in the gut. They try to get rid of your good, the bad bacteria. So say you have a raging streptococcal infection and it's causing you to have, you know, sore throat and really bad symptoms. And the doctor says, oh, we'll just prescribe an antibiotic. Well, when you take that antibiotic, it goes through the gut and then gets into the general circulation, the systemic circulation, so it can kill this bacteria. But the problem is it kills everything in its wake. So it can, if it stays in the mouth long enough, it could disrupt the mouth flora. Well, generally it doesn't, unless somebody decides to chew their antibiotic. Most people don't. But as it makes its way down and it gets broken open and dissolved in the stomach, it's going to destroy the flora all throughout the stomach before it actually gets absorbed into the bloodstream. And this is problematic, because gut flora disruption can create problems, not just with anxiety, but a lot of other problems. So antibiotics are a huge cause. Number two, antibiotics in foods, So what foods contain antibiotics? Well, it's certainly not lettuce and tomatoes. They don't generally contain antibiotics. They don't have the ability to hold on to antibiotics, but our animal products. So if you're eating commercially grown meat or drinking dairy or eating eggs, you're going to get residues of the antibiotics that were fed those animals. And in commercial meat production and dairy production and egg production, the animals live in these really tight, close quarters to make cheap meat available. So they live in these close quarters. They are, you know, pooping on each other. They're infecting each other. So in order to have a good harvest, so to speak, if you want to call it that, the animals are fed very high levels of antibiotics. And those antibiotic residues stay in the flesh and get into the body. And so you can actually be destroying your gut flora every time you sit down and, you know, go to the steakhouse and have a steak, or go to the burger place and have a burger, or sit down and, you know, drink your milk or eat ice cream or any of those things. You can be putting a damper on your gut flora. So antibiotics are huge. Another thing that's problematic are birth control pills. And we know a lot of women are on birth control pills because it's one of the very few effective means of birth control. And a lot of women are put on them. Some young women in their teens, even if they're not sexually active, are put on birth control pills to regulate their menstrual cycles. I was one of those. I was put on birth control pills when I was a teenager to regulate my menstrual cycles. That kills your gut flora. That throws off the good organisms. It just basically places a war in your system. And what happens when you do that and you destroy your good flora, certain other organisms can grow out of control. And many of you have heard of, you know, post-antibiotic yeast infections, because once you kill off all the good bacteria that are sitting in your gut trying to protect you, those organisms, the candida albicans and other forms of yeast, can grow out of control because they don't have the balance there. Remember, we talked, they live there and they don't really do much harm unless they grow out of control. So birth control pills are another issue. The chlorinated water, right? Why do we put chlorine in water? To make it safe, right? To kill off the organisms that are living there. Well, it gets into the system.
Along with the fluoride,
which disrupts thyroid function. Yeah, absolutely. Right? So there's all these things in our world. There's sugars and processed foods, which actually are like they feed the abnormal flora in the gut, which crowds out our good flora. So there's a lot of just general practice things that happen in our society that are destroying our gut flora. So this is why we end up with out of balance gut flora and all these kinds of symptoms that can result.
And this goes back to what you were talking about towards the beginning with stress, because then our body's under stress and then it releases those inflammatory cytokines you have often talked about, which play that part in our immune system and put it into that high alert. And
right. And
so then our body reacts to all that stress as if it were an infection. And then you have this cycle going where it's affecting your immune system and your gut microbiome.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, you talked about how the gut gets involved there. You talked a little bit at the beginning about the pathogenic bacteria in the gut, and there's those, the H. pylori, and all those things that create those direct illnesses and sometimes ulcers and other digestive issues. And they also have that reaction, that interaction with the gut for those inflammatory cytokines.
And cytokines, for those people who don't remember or recognize that word, they're chemicals that are in the body. They're part of the immune system. They're intended to protect us. But like anything else, when they're out of balance, they can create havoc in the system. So every time we put a, we light a fire in our body, we light fires in our body all the time to fight infection, to heal injuries. There's all kinds of reasons for inflammation, but it's supposed to be a kind of a like segmented section. Okay, we have this inflammation that goes on, the healing happens, and then we go back to normal. But it's always, there's always a downside to everything. So there's, it's like when you light a fire, you light a fire in the fireplace, there may be some negative repercussions for that. You light a fire to cook food, there's some negative repercussions in terms of the chemicals that get released into the environment that are not so healthy. Same thing in your body. You light a fire to try to heal an area, to bring inflammation and extra blood and healing chemicals to an area. But the downside is that you end up with these fires and these cytokines. I like to think about these little inflammatory fires.
Right. And, you know, it all speaks to that stress response that you know, it's that foundational piece again with the stress response. And just having that peace that helps as we work on our gut flora. And as you mentioned, I think you mentioned lactobacillus and bifidobacteria. More than those two, right?
All right.
Okay, here we go.
I had to call back in on the phone, and I'm called in as a guest, so kind of weird.
Okay, but we can hear you.
Now you can hear me. It still looks like I'm in as the host. So I thought it was you that disappeared. So I guess we need to just let me regroup and tell me where I left off, and I'm going to switch microphones.
Well, I can tell you where I last heard you, and that's when I asked the question about the different strains of bacteria.
Okay, so I didn't hear that. What was I saying right before that?
I was talking about how you had mentioned, you know, we have the pathogenic bacteria in the gut, such as H. pylori, and how they interact with the immune system in the gut and the stress response. But we also know that there are certain strains of good bacteria in the gut. And so that's when I was saying, I know there's the bifidobacterium and the lactobacillus, which you've spoken about, but we know that there's many more than that.
Okay,
and
got it.
So there you go.
Yeah, did you hear me talking about cytokines? Because you were mentioning cytokines, and
yes,
I was explaining what cytokines were.
Yes, you talked about that right before that.
Oh, and then I dropped off.
Yep.
I must have dropped off. You thought I stopped talking, and then you
asked. I'm going, hello?
Okay. So, sorry about this, guys. So getting back to what we were just, so the bacteria, there's all kinds of strains that live in there. And, you know, when you go to the health food store and you buy a probiotic supplement, those are intended to replace your good gut flora. And the problem is, though, that there's, you know, some of them have 4 strains, some of them have 8 strains, some of them have 12 strains. And then if you compare them all, you know, maybe you can identify 20 or 30 strains that are used in the variety of different supplements that are out there. In reality, there's thousands that have been identified that are, some of them are known to be beneficial, and some of them we don't know enough about. And so some of the most common ones, one is Bifidobacter. Bifidobacter predominates in the large intestine, and it's supposed to be the predominant flora in there. And so when I do tests with people, if I have people I'm working with that have, whether they have gut problems or head problems or whatever that I'm trying to deal with, I might do a stool analysis. And some of the tests will test for what does the normal flora look like. So they test for the known strains that are the good guys. They test for the known strains that are known as the opportunistic, and sometimes they call them the commensals. And then they test for the ones that they know are pathogenic. So you get a report that shows the colonies and how much of each of these things are in your gut. And I typically see very low or sometimes no bifidobacter. So the bifidobacter are the ones that we know produce some serotonin, they produce dopamine, they produce GABA, and they probably produce a whole host of other things that are known to be beneficial. So when they get out of balance, so say you're supposed to have X percent of your gut being bifidobacter and you don't, well, something else is going to grow in its place. And hopefully it's some other good guys, but a lot of times it's not, and a lot of times it's some of these potentially pathogenic or pathogenic organisms. So when I do these stool tests, I'll see things like Klebsiella, Clostridia, Streptococcus, E. coli. There's all sorts of things. Now, all of those things live in you. That's fine, as long as they're in balance. But it's when the normal flora gets disrupted that those guys can grow out of control. In addition to bacteria, you've got funguses and yeasts that grow inside of you, like candida. People talk a lot about candida overgrowth, like it's this bad guy, but actually candida is not such a bad guy. It's when it gets overgrown and it's out of control and it's crowding other things out and it's creating toxins. I was talking about endotoxins and the various toxins that the bugs can create. Was that part after I'd gotten dropped off?
That must be, because that doesn't completely
ring a bell. Yeah, so you've got this good colonization that you need to have in there, and if it goes out of balance, then your brain can go out of balance. So you may be walking around like, oh, I'm always anxious or I'm depressed, and you're on edge, and indeed it may not have anything to do with your deficiency of an anxiolytic drug. It may have to do with the fact that your gut bugs are out of balance. So what I was saying was, in addition to the good guys producing neurotransmitters that support you, and they also help support you in digestion and absorption, so it'll help with the absorption of nutrients. When you have out-of-balance bacteria, it can disrupt the digestion and the absorption, and you can have the production of toxins that can be irritating to the brain and other body tissues. So you mentioned H. pylori. H. pylori, Helicobacter pylori, it's a bacteria. It has been found to live mostly in the stomach, but can live throughout the intestinal tract as well. And it's been shown to be a contributing factor in a lot of stomach ulcers. And the reason it does that is because it bores holes in the gut. It digs itself down to take a strong hold. You ever have a kid that's having a tantrum and you're trying to take this kid and put them on the school bus or put them in the car to take them to school and they don't want to go, right? They're hanging on to the chair for dear life, or they're hanging on to something for dear life, and you're afraid that if you pull them up, you're going to pull the whole structure that they're sitting attached to. Same thing happens in the gut. They just bore themselves in and they hang on for dear life. So they're relatively hard to get rid of. Excuse me. So that's Helicobacter pylori, and it can actually bore holes. But others of these, like a lot of these bacteria and yeasts and fungal forms, they produce toxins, and these toxins can actually make their way in to the blood system, past the barrier that's supposed to keep them out. Because why? Because there's holes in it, because there's inflammation. And some of these cytokines that Lynn mentioned earlier, these cytokines being inflammatory markers, inflammatory chemicals, basically the fire that helps you to protect areas, it burns out of control and they bore holes in. And then the toxins can get into the bloodstream and aggravate. But there's a particular toxin called lipopolysaccharide that's been identified in cases of leaky gut. It's a bacterial endotoxin, gets produced, and then it bores holes in the intestinal lining. And when there's holes bored into the intestinal lining, stuff that shouldn't get in there gets in there. So various toxins that are supposed to be filtered out and pooped away can get into the bloodstream. And when you've got the chemicals that disrupt the gut lining, they can also disrupt the blood-brain barrier. And the blood-brain barrier is a barrier between the bloodstream and the brain. Not everything in the blood is allowed to get into the brain to protect the very delicate brain tissue. And when that gets disrupted, a lot of these toxins can get into the brain. That can cause irritation and hyperactivity of the brain, which can create anxiety. So there's just a whole lot of different interactions here. I hope I answered your question.
Yes. You know, and it's important to recognize that we do need this bacteria. We, over the last few years, several years actually, we have been flooded with all these antibacterial soaps and so forth. And there's several studies that have shown that, I think it's rats or mice that were raised in these germ-free environments, and they have this the different production of those brain neurons. It's almost like a fertilizer, and that helps with the regeneration and the plasticity and the repair. Then do animal, the mice that had the gut bacteria in their gut. And I'm assuming we need that same type of fertilizer with those bacteria. And there's also been that rate of incline of depression and anxiety and all these other things that happen with the brain at the same time. So it shows that these bacteria, these germs, are good for us. And it helps us with all the other additional stresses of our lives. And so what I guess the bottom line comes down to, so how can we affect our gut microbiome and our immune system on a day-to-day practical level?
Yeah, on a day-to-day practical level, yeah, there's a lot of ways that we can do it. Number one is avoiding unnecessary antibiotics. Like we have a tendency in our societies every time you cough or sneeze to run to the doctor and get a drug because you don't want to have any downtime. And they oftentimes prescribe antibiotics even when they're not needed, even when it's a potential more likely to be a viral infection than it is to be a bacterial infection, and that's a disruptor. Number two, you know, don't drink the tap water that's been chlorinated. Filter your water. Get a good home filter or buy filtered water. So that's going to keep the chlorine from disrupting your microbiome. Number three, avoid eating commercially grown animal products because of the high levels of antibiotic residues in them, and plus steroids and steroid hormones. And those have an effect too. Remember, we talked birth control pills earlier disrupting the microbiome. Well, you know, hormones that you're taking in from an animal that's not been, you know, raised without the extra hormones. Even animal, I personally think limiting the amount of animal products in general, just because they naturally have hormones in them that can disrupt your microbiome. So those are ways to do it. Avoiding the processed sugars and flours and other kind of products that can convert into sugar, which can feed the organisms that we don't want. Another way is to eat prebiotic food. And what are prebiotics? Well, prebiotics are foods that are known to be fuel for our microflora, so fuel for our good microbiome. So there are things like chicory, for example, and Jerusalem artichoke. They contain something called inulin, which can be really helpful because our bodies don't necessarily break it down, but the bacteria do. There can be a downside to taking that if you already have disrupted flora, however, because sometimes if you have disruption of the bad guys, they'll eat that too. And so certain people who have small intestinal bacterial overgrowth may have a sensitivity to some of these prebiotic foods. So for a while, you're not eating that until you get your colonization ready. So these are ways to keep it from getting disrupted. And then once you've got it going or you're trying to establish it, you got to feed it. Right? It's like a garden. You've got to feed it, and you've got to make sure that you put the right organisms in. So eating foods that are rich in probiotic organisms, like sauerkraut and kefir and yogurt and things like that, which actually have live cultures in them. And these are foods that you can easily, very easily make at home. I just ate my my dinner, which was a coconut paleo wrap with turmeric in it, which is a good anti-inflammatory, by the way. And I loaded it up with some lettuce and some cashew yogurt that my husband made. And the cashew yogurt has basically been blended cashews where we put a probiotic starter in there and let them grow. And it turns sour and has this really, really nice yogurt flavor. And it's really awesome for replenishing the gut bacteria. There's a lot of beverages on the market right now that can provide that, like Kevita, which has got the various probiotic strains in there that you can use to enhance Inner Echo, which is a really nice coconut kefir type beverage that you just take very small amounts. You can certainly take probiotic supplements to try to keep that going as well. And you want to focus on making sure that you get enough bifidus, that the bifidus is a good predominant in there because of how important that is for so many of us, especially with anxiety. There were some studies that I looked at recently that showed how they took people with anxiety and they put them on a bifidus supplement and had tremendous decrease in their anxiety scores, tremendous, within just a few days. So it's really not something that takes a really long time to establish. If your anxiety is caused by a neurotransmitter deficit that's caused by imbalanced gut flora, boom, you can have an amazing response eating those appropriate foods. And a lot of people say to me, well, how long do I have to take probiotics for? I said, well, how long do you plan to live? And it's not like it's an optional food. Well, how long do I have to take protein for? How long do I have to take vitamin C for? And I mean in the form of food, right? How long do I have to make sure I get enough vitamins and minerals and proteins and fats? Well, for as long as you plan to be alive, because they're key, important, instrumental pieces. And because we live in this bacteria-phobic society, and everybody's got, like you said, the hand washes outside of every supermarket, right? They have the handy sanitizer, so you're killing off all your good flora. And we're doing all these things to disrupt our microbiome. We have problems, and we should be replenishing our microbiome with those really good foods. There might be times for a while where, because of the disruption, that certain organisms that you add back, even though they're good for you, can cause a disruption of the flora. It's like, oh, there's a war going on down there, and sometimes it doesn't feel so hot for a few days. You can go very slowly. Sometimes there's disruptions where your body's not tolerating certain of the saccharides in these foods, and so you avoid those for a while. You might have heard of diets called the specific carbohydrate diet or the FODMAP diet. Those are based on that we have this really bad out-of-balance flora, and we don't want to feed the bad guys more fuel, so we take away some of the good fuel that would be good for our own flora, and we have to be really careful, and that's where, you know, working with somebody who knows how to do it if you've got some chronic long-standing problems. But I'm not saying here by presenting this today that you should never take an anti-anxiety medication. But you should be looking at what's the downside of taking an anti-anxiety medication. How's it affecting your liver? Is it truly solving the problem or putting a Band-Aid over the problem? If the problem happens to be you're not getting enough of the neurotransmitter precursors because you're not digesting your proteins well because your gut flora is out of balance, or you're not producing some of these neurotransmitters in the gut, or you're producing endotoxins from these bacteria, and you just take an anti-anxiety medication, you're not getting to the root of the problem.
And so it comes down to, you know, what is it Sean Croxton says? Just eat real food?
Just eat real food. Eat real food. Avoid the stuff that's been processed. And make sure the real food has real bugs on it. Right? If you go out to your garden, like, for example, you go out to your garden and you pick a cabbage, right? And you chop that cabbage up and you put it in a crock. And without putting any extra bacteria in, any extra probiotics, you let it sit, it's going to ferment. Because there's all these amazing bacteria living on it that are good for you that then grow and multiply as you sour it and ferment it into sauerkraut. But if we're constantly scrubbing our vegetables with those antibacterial vegetable washes, you're going to lose a lot of that, a lot of the ability of your body to replenish its good gut flora because the food is sterile. We don't want to eat sterile food. No, we don't want to eat food that the cows have been pooping on. Maybe, maybe not. We don't want to eat foods that humans have been pooping on or the dog's been pooping on. No, right. Of course not. Or that somebody who's working at the store has been handling. You want to give it a relatively decent wash, but I think those antibacterial, those, you know, soak your produce and all these things is not necessarily a good thing unless you are already immune compromised and have to be ultra careful. But then you also want to make sure that you're doing other things to replenish the good bacteria.
There was a comment on the chat. He said, here's an odd thought. Do you think people 100 years ago were healthier, even though they didn't have the medicines we do today, but they didn't have the pollution and the food preservatives we do today? And that's a good point.
It's a good point, because if you look around, there's certain diseases that didn't exist back then. Autoimmune disease is on the rise because the body, the immune system is so haywire. So I think that there's something to be said. I know that, you know, some of the evolutions that we have where people live longer, et cetera, a lot of it has to do with sanitation, that, you know, we are not living in filth. So, we, you know, there's a balance there, right? You don't want to have
right.
this filthy stream going through and you're just drinking out of it. No, we're talking about a balance here. And think in the olden days, they didn't have the proper sanitation. They also didn't have the ability to do the heroic measures in accidents and conditions where we can. I mean, there's amazing, like, prenatal stuff, like a baby born at 22 weeks that can be given heroic Western medicine and saved and grows to be a full human being. Those are amazing things, and I think I applaud what Western medicine can do in those situations and in the situations of emergencies and accidents. But I believe that we're not doing ourselves the best good to turn to Western medicine for chronic conditions and for things like anxiety and depression, unless they're at the point where someone is suicidal and you need to do a heroic intervention short term, but you really need to be going to the
right.
root. And I think the gut is a, you know, big part of the root. There was another study I was looking at that where they actually took people and put them on prebiotics, and they looked to see how that would affect anxiety. Amazing differences. Amazing where they brought down the level of anxiety by giving the prebiotics like we were talking about earlier.
We do have a question. Do you want to take
sure.
that now?
Sure. Let's take questions.
Oh, okay. This is, well, I'm not sure. It's 1111111. Your line is open. Hello?
Hello?
Hello? Hello?
Hi there.
Hello.
What's your name?
Hi, mine's Garrett. How are you guys doing?
Great. Garrett, did you say?
Yes.
Yeah, welcome, Garrett.
Thanks for having me. How are you doing?
I'm doing wonderfully. Thank you for being here. How can I help? Garrett, you faded out there.
I'm sorry?
Yeah, did you have a question, Garrett? Keep
Hello?
Going blank. If you have a question,
Hello?
Go ahead and ask it. Okay. Well, let's just see if there's
Hello?
Any other questions.
Am I on
yeah.
the air?
Yeah. Yeah, do you have questions, Garrett?
Oh, I just want to say that I agree with everything you've been saying. Just
oh.
everything you've been saying, I totally agree with. You just nailed it on the head. Well, you.
Thank you. That's so sweet of you to say. Thank you.
Oh,
wonderful.
He dropped.
Appreciate that.
And then we have another caller, 818.
Okay.
Hi, this is Ruth. I've been listening in, and I've had a burning question for a while to ask someone about probiotics, because my body has been doing a funny thing for several years now, which is after a few weeks, it keeps not liking chicken and chicken eggs, and it's the, I think it's called Campylobacter bacteria. And I just realized listening today that the chicken I've been buying says no added hormones, but it doesn't say anything about antibiotics.
Mm-hmm.
And
there
I'm thinking, that may be the, I think I need to switch over to organic chicken. And in terms of chicken eggs, would that be that, let's see, I haven't seen any markings about, I've seen a few that say no hormones, but again, nothing about antibiotics. I guess that would get resolved if I buy organic eggs as well, huh?
Exactly. Yeah, you're going to have to do that, right, and just be really careful because, if you're getting in, feeling bad with that stuff, then it very well could be.
Well, what happens
this
is so
Lynn.
Bizarre.
I was going to say, too, maybe stop doing the eggs for a while and just, if you're going to do one or the
eggs. I've tried that, and then I can eat eggs after, if I stop for like 10 days, and same with chicken, and it's a funny thing that I recognize when it's coming back, and I just immediately stop eating them, and then I'm good back in about another 10 days. But I think, if I try switching over, maybe that should make all the difference. In fact, I would like to ask just one more question that I'm sure everybody is curious about, in case either of you might have an answer. Would there be any guidebook of any sort or any place online that we can find what strain of probiotics are good to treat what symptoms?
Oh, gosh. You know, that, because it's not,
no,
I wish it was cookbook like that. There's not exactly, I know one of our practitioners in my nutritional endocrinology training program who was on a couple of weeks ago, she's done a lot of research in that, and there are certain ones that have been shown, but I don't know of any guidebook that says this and that. Like, for example, Lactobacillus reuteri. Really good for mouth infections. You know, a lot of really good research on that. There's certain others that you want to avoid if you have small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, like things that produce D-lactic acid. But I don't think there is. It would be, I think it's too soon in the study to be that specific.
You know, though, Steph did have a bacterial benefits ebook with 5 strains of bacteria, and let's see.
Do we still have that link? You can check it out.
She actually,
if you go back a couple of weeks ago, we had a show with Steph Jackson, and she talked about that. There's no like book that's like, you know, all 1,000 strains and what they can be good for. But
right,
like,
I mean,
she's done a lot
of
research,
and
she has
great,
a little ebook. Where she put together 5 of them, and she gives away that for free, and we can give you the link to that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I know. My favorite is DDS.
Yeah, I mean, they're all different, right? Everybody's different. That's got a lot of lactobacillus in it, if it gets a couple of strains of that. But it's all, like, that's not a particular organism, right? So there's different probiotic supplements.
Oh, right.
And
that's
some of
true.
Them have groups, and some of them have particular, like they do have those little numbers related to it. But I don't think their research like that exists to the extent that it would be as helpful as we think it would.
Let
Lynn give you that link, and you can take a look at Steph's stuff.
And it does say, learn which bacteria can heal leaky gut, decrease pathogenic bacteria, reduce inflammation, reduce oxalates, and inhibit H. pylori. And I will, if this doesn't work, I do encourage you to go back to our radio show, like she said, from about 2 or 3 weeks back, and it's called Specific Benefits of 5 Probiotic Bacteria and the Best Ways to Use Them.
Terrific.
So if you didn't
Thank
hear
you.
That show, I would encourage you to listen to that show as well. But
yeah,
great.
You'll enjoy it.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, ladies.
Absolutely.
All right.
Appreciate
thank
your
you.
Help.
Sure.
You're very welcome. Okay, so we have a 718 area code.
Hi. I have a couple questions. I'm actually excited about your show. And I literally am just, I've been generally, like, for the last year, sort of mostly vegetarian, but went through a period where I was actually just highly stressed and losing a lot of weight. And so actually just a couple of weeks ago, like, ate a little bit of organic grass-fed beef and a little bit of some eggs and things like that. And now I'm getting back, sort of back to beans and lentils and root vegetables and all the good high-fiber stuff. And generally going, like, you know, avoiding all the stuff you're talking about, like, you know, meats with hormones and milk.
Right.
But I did a try. I had a question about, I found a product that is billed as something like Swedish-style fill milk, which is a, and it's grass-fed milk with a number of live active cultures. It's saying it has probiotic cultures of L. acidophilus and Bifidobacterium sp and L. casei, and then it has like a whole bunch of other lactose-based, like lactose cremoris, lactose bivor,
Okay, so it's a bunch of probiotics, and it's a milk, you said? It's a dairy, like a cow's milk kind of product?
It is a dairy, and it says on the side, like, no, all natural milk from grass-fed cows with no artificial anything in it. So I'm experimenting. Like, I had it once before. It does, I do feel like when I drink it, like, it feels good somehow. So it must be those things. I used to find coconut, I was curious about the thing you mentioned, that there was a coconut based.
Yeah.
Because when I was really getting off all the dairy, I was kind of trying to just almost go no dairy at all, but I want to get the, and I was at that point eating a lot of sauerkraut, which I haven't been doing for a while, which is good.
Yeah.
I guess, sorry if I'm going on, but I'm gathering from what you're saying that, you know, maybe a good thing to do is to get, like, you know, sauerkraut, like doing different kinds of, in a sense, sour or cultured foods is a way to get, like, a variety of these different.
Exactly. Because it's all going to be a little bit different, and you may find that you gravitate towards one versus another. I'm not a big dairy fan. There's a lot of downside to dairy. I have on my blog, if you go to dreamery.com/blog and just type in dairy, I did a really exhaustive thing a couple of years ago, a blog post, just pulling all the pros and the cons, and I'm not a big fan of it. I mean, I say if you're going to do dairy, I think it should be from a non-cow because it has less casein, and the casein is less disruptive to the human body. It should be cultured, it should be organic, and it should be raw and fermented. And if you can find dairy like that, then you might do well with it, but a lot of people just don't do well with casein or lactose. And galactose, which is the milk sugar, has been implicated in cases of uterine and other kinds of female reproductive cancers and breast. So I just like to stay away from things that have hormones in them, except myself.
But even though this is like grass-fed cows, it's still
going to
have
it doesn't matter
because
the animal has hormones, right? So grass-fed meat is still going to have hormones in it. Right, people think it's hormone-free. It's not. It's no added hormones, but, you know, and plus you get the fear hormones, and that's a whole other story when they're slaughtered. So there's just a lot of reasons, like if you are going to include animal products, to keep it not as the bulk of your diet, but just as a supplement.
Right.
And some people need to add a little bit of that because they're just not able to process certain nutrients from the plant foods. And then, you know, some people survive really well on, well, every 2 or 3 weeks I'll have some, you know, organic goat yogurt, and that helps me. And not me personally, I've been 30 years vegan, but for other people, you know, sometimes that works, and everybody's biochemistry is a little bit different, so you find what works with the least toxicity to it and the least possibility of
harm. Right. So I guess that's my question is, like, do you have any suggestions of alternatives? Because I'm liking, you know, I did go sort of dairy-free and vegan for quite some time. It was just sort of recently, long story, but, like, you know, I kind of went off it for a little while. Now I'm getting back on it. And so I used to shop at a place, and I can't find it anymore. They used to have, like, a coconut kefir, which I was like, great, I can have my kefir, but without the milk. I don't know. And is there a way to make it yourself?
It's so simple. Yeah. You know where you go to? BodyEcologyDiet.com. Donna Gates has recipes in there for how to make your own. It's so simple. It's really, really easy. Yeah, and coconut, like cashew yogurt, what I mentioned earlier, I make this cashew yogurt, and my husband does mostly now, but you basically take some cashews or any nut or seed, put it in the blender with water, equal parts of the nut or seed to water, and then you put in a probiotic. We usually put in a powdered probiotic that's about maybe 100 billion organisms in a teaspoon, and we'll put in one teaspoon for every cup of nuts or water, and then we blend it up, and then we put it in the dehydrator at the very lowest temperature. You can put it on top of your oven or on top of your refrigerator. Mm-hmm. It's always warm.
Just like
cover
making
it
bread,
like making bread or like making yogurt, right? And or you can even buy a yogurt maker for like $30-$40 on Amazon, and they have the little cups, and you put it in. It has a little dome, and you put them in the cups, and you can actually make your yogurt in there, and it's phenomenal. It's totally phenomenal.
I like that. So you just buy like a powdered, can you just get that online or even like at a health food store? You
powdered
get like
probiotic.
Powdered probiotic.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And then you just basically can add it to like you could even add it to your coconut milk or your almond milk or your.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
That sounds great.
And then you let
and
it
then
sour.
I can totally get rid of the dairy.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, totally.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Any other
suggestions? Yeah, I've been dairy-free for 30 years, and I don't miss it, and I feel all the more healthy without it.
Yeah, I noticed that when I am, I've kind of gone back and forth, but when I am, I feel better. Do you have any other suggestions of other, like, just sour cultured foods we might
explore? So the cultured vegetables. Sauerkraut is so easy to make. Come to our show on Saturday. We're going to show how to do it in the kitchen. If you go, what's the link to that, Lynn? drritamarie.com/go/, I think it's just VAK registration, something like that? V is in Victor,
so.
V is in Vital, H is in Healing, K is in Kitchen, Vital Healing Kitchen. I think it's registration. Right, Lynn? She'll come up with the right one.
I'm looking it up right now.
Yeah, and when you go there, we're going to be doing these shows in my kitchen once a month where we show how to make food. And this month is all about, you know, your gut, how to help your gut so that you can help your brain. And we're going to be teaching how to make, really simply, how to make sauerkraut and a couple of other cultured foods.
Oh, I'd love to do that.
Just VHK.
Just VHK?
Oh,
yeah, just
one other. What's a good food to get? What you were mentioning, which is you're saying one of the dominant. Is it I don't know if I'm pronouncing it. Bacivit.
The bifidus. Bifidus.
Thank
you. Bifidus. Yeah. From a probiotic standpoint, a lot of the baby ones, the infant ones, are high in bifidus because that's the predominating one when we're first born. Here's the deal. If you're going to make your own and you're, like, thinking after doing some research, boy, I feel like I need more bifidus, you can actually make your sauerkraut and add extra bifidus to it, and they're going to gobble up the bifidus and reproduce it, and you're going to have a sauerkraut that's higher in bifidus or a yogurt.
Uh-huh.
Or a
I see. So, but you but you mean you would get it, like, in various yogurts or sauerkrauts and things like that.
Yeah, usually you don't know what organisms are there when people do the live culture, when you just do it naturally without adding extra
probiotics to it. You don't
know. It's a wild ferment.
Specifically, right.
Yeah, so if you want to
specifically
do it. And
I guess we also don't know, if you really want to be scientific about it, I guess you'd have to, like, you don't really know which things you have the most of and what you have less of, right? It's like.
Yeah, I mean, you can do stool analysis. Which can be costly. There's a new company called the Ubiome that will test for like a lot of different species in there. But then you have to know how to interpret it,
I wonder, you know, there is that thing, you know, I mean, when I used to eat, I was starting to buy like completely raw, like made. I would love to make it myself, but I'll be watching your show. But I would get, you know, raw, uncooked, organic sauerkraut, and I just noticed, you know, it's like
I just would feel it. Like, I would eat a lot of it and be like, boy, this feels good.
Yeah, it's like I would know the change.
So you know you're getting something.
Yep.
And so
absolutely. Absolutely. It's great stuff. And it's easy to make. And it doesn't have to be just with cabbage. You can chop up your vegetables. The Koreans make kimchi, where it's a bunch of chopped vegetables instead of the shredded
stuff.
I see.
The
kimchi. They put everything in it.
Good reminder.
You can put
seaweed
in it, too.
That's what I have to start doing again, is eating the kimchi and the sauerkraut. And
yeah. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. It's good gut food. Gut food, brain food.
Yeah.
And I just was double-checking. It is VHK registration. To register, just VHK will just bring you to the show.
If you just put that into, like, Google, just VHK
Dr. RitaMarie.com, my main website, /GO, the word go, /V, as in vital, H as in healing, K as in kitchen, registration.
Okay, gotcha. Terrific.
Yeah.
Thank you so
much.
This is a great show. I really love it. And I'll get off the line so other people can get on. But the last thing I would ask is if there's any other prebiotics that you might mention.
Well, prebiotics like inulin, Jerusalem artichoke's a good source, chicory's a good source, yacon, which is a South American kind of a tuber type of a thing. What's some others, Lynn? Put on a blank on. Dandelion greens,
yeah.
And you know, just in general, the fibers from the vegetables feed the good bacteria. They live on it. The lactobacillus loves the fiber. The bifidobacter loves that fiber, and they'll reproduce from the fiber from your.
So,
baby.
Like, high, just eating lots of different kinds of like
lots
fruits
of different
and vegetables
kinds of raw fruits and vegetables. Yep.
And with the chicory, it's the chicory root.
Chicory root, yeah. That's right.
Okay.
The chicory leaves are good for you in other ways. So.
Yes.
Yeah.
Great.
Oh, and what's the other one? Celery root, I think, is also another good one.
Oh, really? Oh, that's good. What's the other one that's like that? My mother used to make a lot of celery root. Raw. Can you eat it raw? Like.
Yeah. I shred it like a slaw.
Shred it. You can make awesome slaw. And if you wanted to make, you can even go crazy on it, you can make shred them all up and mix it with the cabbage and throw it in the crock and make sauerkraut. And then you have all this, I mean, you're feeding them and you're growing them, and it's an amazing food for gut flora.
Yep.
I love it. I'm so excited for your show because I've been wanting to do that for a while.
Super. Okay, great.
Really,
well, we'll see you Saturday
kitchen.
Then.
Okay,
we'll wait for you
so
from
much.
The kitchen. All right. And what's your name again?
My name's Christina.
Christina.
And, the last thing,
where are you from?
I'm from New York City.
Oh, New York. I used to live there. I grew up there.
Yeah. I wondered if you'd mentioned that coconut bit. You mentioned something, I think it was Kevita, you said, and there was
Kevita.
Something else.
Yeah, you can get that at most of the health food stores, Kevita. And I've got
is
a bottle here. I drink it. It's very yummy, and it has in it, like this one's what they call their tonic, and it has apple cider vinegar. This is the chili lime flavor, chili ginger lime. And it's got purified water, apple cider vinegar, the probiotic culture, which is bacillus and lactobacillus rhamnosus, lactobacillus paracasei, lactobacillus plantarum, apple juice. Oh, apple juice. I thought it was apple cider vinegar. ginger, whole plant extract, chili pepper extract, lime whole plant extract, ascorbic acid, and stevia. And so there's different flavors of different kinds. I didn't realize this had apple juice in it. I thought it had just apple cider vinegar.
Oh, so it has a little apple juice. I
it does
see.
Have a little apple juice in it. Okay.
And what was the other one you mentioned?
There was something. Inner Echo.
Inner Echo?
Inner Echo.
Oh.
That, I have a funny story about Inner Echo. It comes in a 16-ounce jar. And it says coconut kefir, and you read the ingredients, and it's coconut and cultures, and it sounded great, so I bought it. And I was drinking it on the way home, you know, as a beverage, like drinking it down, 16 ounces. I got home, I was almost finished it. And then I looked at it, and I read it, and it said that it had, you were only supposed to drink an ounce of it was a serving, and that the entire bottle had 3 trillion organisms in it.
Wow.
So I sat down in one sitting and drank 3 trillion organisms.
I was going to say, were you, like, racing to the... I don't know. Did you have any reaction?
I could feel that there was some good stuff going on down there.
Oh, okay. So, yeah. So, yeah, you're supposed to just sort of do it in small doses or...
It's like a shot. You take a shot, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Well, that sounds great. So I'll look for that.
Yep. All right. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
You're so welcome. Bye now. All right.
We actually have two more. This is 402213. And
hello.
Your line is open.
How are you doing tonight, Doc?
Wonderful. How are you? What's your name?
Oh, I'm doing good. How are you?
Fantastic. How can I?
Well, that's awesome.
Yeah.
My name's Bill.
Bill, wonderful. Welcome.
I'm a big fan of the show. I'm really actually kind of nervous to be on.
Aw, how sweet. Well, no need to be nervous. We don't bite.
Oh, thank you very much. I wanted to let you know about a raw food recipe.
Super. Love to hear it.
Sweet. I have a blog up, and I talk a lot about raw food, just the way it kind of helps, even with anxiety and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And one I wanted to share with you, I know you had mentioned the whole goat yogurt earlier, but I personally like to drink right from the udder.
You drink right from the udder? Interesting. That's right. Unprocessed, isn't it?
Yep, and he got dropped.
Okay, good. So,
all right.
Who's next? Anybody else?
So we have another 402. Your line is open.
Hi, how are you doing?
Hi, good. Wonderful.
That's pretty cool that there's another 402 number here.
Where's 402 located?
Omaha, Nebraska.
Oh, wow. Very cool.
Yeah, it's nice here, I guess.
Cool. So what's your name?
My name's Buford.
Buford, great to meet you. So what's your question, Buford?
So I have a big test coming up. And I was like, it's for psychology and I'm really anxious. I know everything. And I was just wondering, I know everything that's going to be on the test.
Right.
I was just wondering what's a good way to break my nerves.
You know, certainly you can look at your gut flora, but I would say that there's an amazing technique from the Institute of Heart Math that helps you to shift your nervous system. So here's the deal, right? When you're anxious and you're nervous about something, you go into the part of your nervous system called sympathetic. And what happens is there, it turns off the prefrontal cortex. And you probably know what that is if you're studying psychology. It's the high-level function part. It turns that off and it turns on the back part of the brain, the hind brain, the primitive brain, because you were supposed to be running and fighting. So I say, when you're under stress, it turns off the wizard and turns on the lizard. When you're taking a test, you want to turn on the wizard and turn off the lizard, right? So this technique that helps you to shift from that sympathetic dominant state to parasympathetic and actually access all that you already know. You know it. And it has to do with breathing and appreciation. And they take you through a process. If you go to heartmath.org and just look up quick coherence or look up for it. They'll have plenty of information about it. And you're basically going to do is you're going to tune into your breathing. So you go in the classroom, you sit down, you're going to take your test. Even on the way to it, you just focus on your heart and you breathe deeply, long inhale, long exhale. And then you think about something, a person, place, event, vacation you were on, where you just feel really at ease and really calm. And really, really thankful. And you go into thankfulness. And if you start to feel the nervousness come up, you just take a moment, you take a couple of breaths, you focus on that thing. I go to the beach. I tell people, whenever I'm nervous, I go to the beach, and it calms me down. And so I just imagine myself at the beach.
All right, yeah. Thank you.
Okay.
I have another question. Is that all right? Another question?
Sure.
All right. I was wondering, so are you a real doctor? And if so, like, where'd you go to school, and do you have any prunes?
Okay, we got a lot of pranksters on the line tonight.
I guess. But that was good information about the heart mass. I think that we can't stress that enough.
Absolutely. Yeah. So anxiety, you know, one of the ways is that, you know, the gut flora is one thing, but it's a whole lot more that goes into having a healthy brain function and having a stress reduced and, you know, parasympathetic dominant state. So thank you.
All right.
I guess we're done for the day, aren't we?
I think so.
Thank you, everybody, for being here and for listening in and for tuning into your gut. You know, your gut has the answers for lots of stuff, and treat it nicely, and it'll treat you nicely, and it'll help you to have a clear-thinking brain. So thank you very much. This is Dr. Rita Marie, and we'll talk to you again soon. Bye-bye now.
Bye.